The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 962. It's the 9th of January 2018. On the podcast today, I have John Peters, Managing Director of Strategic Minerals, that's SML ticker, and John discusses the new record for magnetite ore sales at the company's Cobra operations and updates on other parts of the business. Also on the podcast, Hannah Pengilly, Chief Development Officer of Ncondesi Energy, that's NCCL. And Hannah gives an update on its process to conclude a binding joint development agreement for the company's integrated 300 megawatt power and coal mine project in Mozambique. I also have Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about Cadence, smart metering systems, and URA Holdings. That's URA ticker. Plus, I also have lessons learned from traders and investors. And by all means, if you've learned a lesson that you try and stick to, please submit it here on the blog at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog, and I'll read it out. Also on the podcast, as always, top five most liked RNSs and top five most followed companies too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Peters, Managing Director of Strategic Minerals, SML ticker. John, thanks for joining me.
Nice to speak to you again in 2018, mate.
Yeah, and you've opened up the year with a cracking bit of news for shareholders, and you're doing very well on the sales front there. We'll get to that in a bit. Before we do, John, for people listening right now, maybe in 2018 they decided to do a bit more investing, and they decided as one of those resolutions to listen to a podcast, and they're not sure as to what you do at the business there. Explain, summarise, what is Strategic Minerals all about, please, John?
Good. I'm glad you clarified that. I thought you asked me what I did, and then that'd be really hard to describe. Strategic Minerals is, as we say, a diversified mineral development and production company. And why we say that is because we're across the whole spectrum. We've got production, which is what we're talking about today, which is the magnetite stockpile at Cobre in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. We've then got a new project that we're looking to finalise at the moment, which is our copper project, Leakey Creek Copper Mine in South Australia. That's one that's near production. Then we go down the scale a little bit further. We get to Redmore, which is in Cornwall, which is where we're drilling with our partners looking for tin. That's our partners' New Age Explorations. And then you go right down to the Greenfield site where we're in Hands Camp, and our subsidiary Care has a number of tenements in West Australia where we've had some drilling success so far looking for nickel and hopefully for nickel sulfides, as well as finding some cobalt and also with some prospects for possibly gold and some rare earths. So we're right across the spectrum, and what we try to do is we've been generating profits, so we try to put those profits back into self-funding some of these other aspects to increase the upside potential for our shareholders.
Yeah, and you've set another record as far as production at Cobre is concerned. Take us through the detail here, if you could, John.
Yeah, look, last quarter we had a sales level of 2,036,000 or so. This quarter, December, we've had one at 2,139,000. But that's probably underselling what the break was in that. The September quarter included some shipment of stuff we couldn't get out in June when a new contract started. The comparative would have been 1,750,000. So we've got about a 20% increase there. But more in particular, we're now establishing these sort of larger levels as the amount of turnover we've got. And as we've been doing this, we've been able to generate much higher profit margins from economies of scales, et cetera, so that we've had a bit of a double whammy. We've got both now very high sales levels and some very nice profit margins, which now, unlike most mining companies, we actually pay our way and, in fact, contribute from that into other projects. So that really differentiates us. And Cobra is going really well. We are on a rollover arrangement with the people there. There's no thought that they're not going to use us to do that. As far as they're concerned, we're removing some of their stuff for them. Everything's going pretty well in that regard. So we're pretty confident that 2018 will be another bumper year for it.
Yeah, well, I suppose to put the sales in perspective of 2017, it's stated in the RNS, it's over a 300% increase on the sales in 2016. So that's impressive, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, what we've got there is we'd been pottering around the 17,000-18,000 mark, and then in 2016 we put on another good client, not until about August or so, and the sales went up to about 20. We're talking tons here. 25,000 tons, and now what we've got is we've just gone into another league now. We're looking from 25,000 tons to 85,000 tons. So you can see it's quite a substantial increase. And as I said, look, you look at the numbers we've got here. The 3 months to December, we turned over, as I said, sales of 2.1 million US. You multiply that by four, that's, 8.4. I'm telling you what, a 60% profit margin. That means that if we can maintain this through the next year, then we're likely to generate from Cobra $4 to $5 million profit, and then from that deduct about 1.1 to run the company. If we could maintain this, this would be a spectacular year for 2018.
Yeah, and talking about that, I mean, what's the next sort of milestone bit of news that people can expect? I understand you can't go into any detail here, but, ballpark.
Now, are you talking about Cobra or...
Anywhere across the whole company. Okay.
Well, let me just put it this way. One of the things which I expect with Cobra is that I don't expect the owners of the mine to actually come out and... give us the rollover ahead of time, although they've said they can't see any problem. So with Cobra, probably the next main announcement will be 1st of March when we announce that the thing's been rolled over. With the rest of the company, well, we've got some pretty exciting stuff going on. We've got the settlement of Lee Creek Copper, which I've made comment in my previous RNSs could in fact double our company. But more particular, it's a near-term cash item. So in about 1 year's time, that'll start, excuse expression, but it'll start spewing out cash as well. So then we've got a double cover. Anything happens at Cobra, we've got Lee Creek Copper running. Both of them aren't long projects. I mean, at current consumption, we'd be out of Cobra in about 5 years. Lee Creek Copper is only about a 4 or 5 year project. But I mean, if we were both having both of them go full time towards those numbers, we'd have an awful lot of cash sitting in the bank. So that's the case. And as you know, those are sort of more immediate cash flows. But then we've got maybe 3 to 4 years off, or I'm sort of targeting around 2021. Hopefully, we'll have Redmore, which is the tin tungsten mine in Cornwall, mm-hmm. kick off. Now that to me is I keep using the word juggernaut on it, but it is. It's a slow moving but a very big project. But once it gets started, we'll have quite a big impact. And of course, we always talk about that as being a legacy project, because if we get something like that going, the effect, the roll on effect to the people in the area and everyone around is quite important. So it makes you feel good about what you're doing as well.
Yeah.
And lastly, you've got Hans Camp. We've had some interesting things there. We've got further exploration programs being pointed at a couple of things which should come out over the next few months. We'll have another program there. That's the one, I mean, if any project will turn us hugely up in numbers in a short period of time, it's discovering something there. So what we've got is we've got a lot of irons in the fire spread across. They're spread across different minerals and metals, so that we're not taking a punt just that one metal is going to do very well, etc. But the interesting thing is most of the ones we've exposed ourselves have fallen into this electronic vehicle type definition. Mm-hmm. So things like cobalt, nickel and tin all are used in the modern electronics and are more used in the, like cobalt's used with the lithium batteries. Tin is a lot of the circuitry nowadays. You know, nickel is used in a lot of the boards as well. So all of that points to the prices related to those developments going up rather than down during the period.
Yeah, and a combination of these projects is what will hopefully spur you on to that 100 million market cap target you have for the company, yeah?
Yeah, we talk about 100 million market cap and trying to get to about 5.75 in the share price, which, frankly, I'd be really disappointed if we weren't over 3 by the time we just announce Cobra rolling over. And in fact, in settling what I might expect, that might even push us towards 4 before you know. But, you know, the market's a fickle thing. You can't tell for certain. There are a lot of players in it that will play around a little bit. But as it stands, I think that's the best way to go. That I really personally believe we'll do quite well over this year. And as I've been quoted elsewhere saying, I had to declare recently, some of my sons wanted to buy shares in the company, so to buy some, and I bought some more for myself. But I had to declare it all as a dad. I'm not going to let my sons buy something I think's going down, I can tell you.
Yeah, exactly. That is a vote of confidence, definitely. Marvellous. Well, John, good to chat to you. And before we go, as you know, as always, if people's listening right now and like the sound of the company but are not following the story yet, give them 3 quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
Okay, well, the first one's value. I believe with the profits we're showing today, it really shows that at just over 2p that we're a really value stock. The second one would be upside potential. As I said, all of those projects have some incredible upside potential. The ability, I seriously believe our company can be doubled easily within 2 years, and that's pretty good potential on any stock, really. And the last one is that you've got professional, honest management. The board's committed. They've got lots of shares in it. And we don't muck around. We don't put out false RNSs or RNSs about nothing, really. We don't go and do podcasts before about the issue. We keep everything pretty well straight as to how we do things. And that's an honesty that our shareholders really seem to value.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff, John. Good to chat to you, fella. And hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Good to speak to you, Justin. Bye, mate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Hanno Pengilly, Chief Development Officer of NCondesi Energy. That's NCCL. Hanno, thanks for joining me again.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
And you had an update just before Christmas on what's happening there with the project, and we'll get to that in a bit. Before we do, Hanno, for people not aware of NCondesi or they're brand new to the podcast, can you explain what NCondesi Energy is all about, please?
Sure. So NCondesi owns 100% of the NCondesi project, which is a 300 megawatt coal-fired power station and coal mine project located in Tete in northern Mozambique, which is looking to develop the project with two partners, General Electric and China Machinery Engineering Corporation, or CMEC, to deliver power into the Mozambican grid.
Excellent stuff. And so you mentioned the two partners there and you released an update on the progress of this agreement. So take us through where you are, what's happening and what's going on in the next 3 to 6 months, if you could, Hanno.
Sure. So we made an announcement on the 27th of December, which it's not the ideal time to put out a press statement between Christmas and New Year. As you say, people are on holiday traveling. So yeah. Definitely useful to get this podcast out for those that weren't able to or had other things to do during that period. But really, we had committed to putting out a release during December for an update. Unfortunately, things were just happening very close to the Christmas and New Year period. So the update did come out quite late. But the important messaging here is that material progress is continuing to be made on the JDA due diligence requirements. We had a very busy December. A number of milestones were completed during the month. First of which was integrating our mine and power plant financial models. That was completed, and that was a very important part of the process because historically we have tended to look at the mine and power plant as separate entities. With the new process that we're running, the projects will be looked at as an integrated project, which brings with it a number of savings and efficiencies that flow through versus the standalone financial models. And the results of that have been quite positive. And you know, we have now submitted that model to our potential partners for review. And really what will happen now with this part of the process is we will now wait for the updated CapEx and OpEx numbers, which will come from the EPC and O&M bids, which are due at the end of February. And once those bids are in and, you know, they've been sort of approved by Nkondezi, we would then have a finalized financial model to submit to the Mozambican Power Utility to finalize our tariff. But again, very positive in that, showing positive, you know, positive results versus the two standalone models, which we're very excited about. It means we have room to be more competitive on the project, as well as generate stronger returns. So overall, very happy with that. In addition to that, we completed our partners completed site visits in Mozambique. They went out between the 18th and the 21st of December, so very late in the year. But you know, they were very keen to get out there and complete those site visits. They're crucial parts of the bid process for the EPC and the O&M bids, is for the technical teams to go out, visit site, and visit the key infrastructure for the project. So they went out and saw the mine location, the power plant location, went and followed the transmission line route to where it would find interconnection into the Mozambican grid, to 92-kilometer line, and also visited other key infrastructure, such as water supply, the Nkondezi River, for example. And overall, was a very positive trip with no fatal flaws identified by the partners and general positive feedback. So, you know, two very important things completed. In addition to that, we have, you know, we are running two processes in parallel. One is the due diligence process. The other is the finalization of the commercial terms of the binding agreements between us and our partners in the form of a joint development agreement. We have now submitted a first draft of that to our partners for review. And that's very important to maintain pressure and progress on this whole process by running, as I say, this dual track process of the commercial agreements and the due diligence at the same time. So a significant amount of work completed in December. One of the things that came out of all this work was an updated timetable or agreed timetable. Unfortunately, we have seen slippage in both the timing of delivery of the EPC and the O&M bids, as well as delivery of the JDA. This is largely as a result of there being more information than I think our partners anticipated when they first started looking at the project. This is a very advanced project, and as I say, it's probably a little later in development than it would normally, than a power project would normally be at when large partners got involved. And by that I mean, you know, we have our power purchase agreements largely in finalized form. We have our tariff structure largely in agreed form. The concession agreements are either approved in the case of the mine, you know, or in near final form draft in the case of the power plant. In addition to that, our ESIAs are all approved, and the balance of permits and approvals are either in place or ready for application. So, you know, there's a lot to go through here. It was unfortunate. We did have a detailed sit down on this and put together a detailed timetable. And it just became apparent that there was, you know, with the resources that both of these partners have, that they just wouldn't be able to get through that amount of information in the timetables that had been originally set. Yeah. So new timetables have been set. We have, however, agreed that, you know, despite the delay, that we will continue to focus on providing, you know, measurable deliverables between now and July. The first of which is the EPC and the O&M bids, which, as I said before, are due at the end of February. The push here was really to take into account we've got Chinese New Year coming up in early February. And again, this is probably a conservative approach, but, you know, I think more time on this, you know, a couple of weeks extra on this is probably in our best interest, because we want to get the best numbers to go into the financial model. In addition to that, you know, we are looking at the due diligence being completed by April. That is the target. And then after that, they've given themselves, you know, 3-month contingency, May, June, July, to get the JDA finalized and signed. Now, bear in mind that, you know, we've submitted the first draft, and we'll try to progress that draft together between now and July as much as possible. But, you know, the July target is seen as a conservative case. And, you know, everybody's motivated to try and deliver that earlier. But again, we've sort of set timetables that we think, you know, give everyone enough room. Everything's being run in parallel to make sure that we can fast track where possible. And excuse me, you know, I think it just, you know, it's not going to be, as I say, a case of a black box between now and July. There are a number of agreed deliverables between now and then, which everybody's very much focused on delivering in the interim.
Yeah. So this extended timeline's essentially a good thing, because you said it shows how much work you've done on the project. And it, in my head, I can picture the guys there, you know, sitting down to look at these folders or files or documents, whatever, and you, I mean, in a comical kind of way, you're placing down one folder, so there we go, and then going back out and bringing in another 10 folders and say, wow, this is a lot of work. So it's just basically more due diligence, isn't it? That's what it is. So it's in no way a reflection of a lack of commitment on their part or anyone's part. It's just the amount of work needs to go into this, isn't it? Isn't that the case?
Look, I mean, it's always unfortunate when a timetable slips, and obviously we are putting as much time and energy as we can to ensure that it's not the case. I think, you know, what is important for us is that, you know, where our partners have had the opportunity to take more time on things in the due diligence phase, they've opted not to take it and would rather try and fast track where possible. So there is a degree of comfort, you know, from the process that we are seeing, that our partners are not looking to exhaust the timetables, but, you know, are trying where possible. And I think are just looking at something now that they have a better understanding of what work has to be done. You know, they've come to us and asked for, you know, what they believe is a more realistic deliverable timetable. And, you know, we have spent a lot of time with them ensuring that, you know, that this timetable is deliverable, that there are key milestones or measurable milestones during this period that we can measure that progress, so that it's not just a case, as I said before, of us, you know, everyone sitting tight and holding for another 3 months. There will be measurable progress that we can feed back to the market, we can feed back to our shareholders, the board of Incondesi, to give everyone the comfort that things are progressing. And again, you know, as I say, you know, in terms of everyone's effort to get things done, you know, one example has been, you know, we are due to the next phase of meetings are actually due to happen in Maputo, the capital of Mozambique, where we will formally introduce General Electric and CIMEC to the Department of Energy and EDM, the national utility. Not that these parties don't know each other already. You know, EDM and CIMEC and GE already operate in Mozambique in the power space, but we need to formally introduce them as our new potential partners. There was an opportunity for the partners at that stage to delay their site visit trip until end of Jan, beginning of February, alongside this introductory meetings with government. And yeah, we were very pleasantly surprised when they came back and said, look, you know, we would prefer to go out in December still to maintain sort of deliverables for the EPC and O&M bids, which, you know, I guess was a very positive reflection. As you can imagine, not everybody was particularly thrilled to go out to Tet. It's about 48 degrees out there over December, mm-hmm. With 100% humidity, and right before Christmas, there's a lot of chaos. But, yeah, you know, that's what they wanted to do to try and, you know, maintain timetables, etc. So that's just one example. But it's all been positively received by Incondesi and the board. as a positive reflection on you know our partners' efforts to try and you know move things as quickly as possible.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Well, Anna, if anyone's listening and likes the sound of this, and you're not yet following the story on Vox Markets, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please, if you could.
Sure. So the first one is the value generation potential of the project. It's continually improving as we're seeing with the new integrated financial model. We are currently looking at net free cash flows between $30 and $50 million per annum to Nkondesi post dilution once the project is operational over a 25-year lifespan. So significant value generation, and that is constantly improving. We are also looking at one of the most advanced power projects in the Southern African region. We have, as I said already on this podcast, we have significantly advanced all key work streams for delivering this project. And the final one, and it's not the least important, but you know we've identified two world-leading power developers with both the balance sheet and the experience to deliver this project alongside us. This is $1 billion-plus project. AIM Juniors can't do this on their own, and you know a key risk mitigator for these projects is to identify those partners who can come in and help both equity, debt, finance the project, as well as operate the project once it's complete.
Marvellous stuff. Hannah, good to chat to you. And like I say, you have got news happening between now and those key dates. So hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Brand Communications, Alan Green. You're right, Al.
Hello, Just. I'm not sure if it's night or day. It's so grey and dull
it
down
is,
here.
Isn't
but
it?
Yeah, it's horrible. Really horrible.
Yeah, it is dark. I was thinking that today. I mean, I just came out of the house this morning. The kid just left. I just had got some coffee from the house there. The kids left school. And I had to put all the lights on to make coffee. Why is it so dark in here? It's really odd.
I know. Yeah. Well, I'm sitting at the window of my office. The blind is up. I'm looking outside, and I've got the light on in the office because I can't see what I'm doing. So, you know, it's grey and horrible. Roll on the summer.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So what are we chatting about? What's the stocks we're looking at, Al?
Okay. I just want to bring listeners up to date on Cadence Minerals. KDNC is the epic code. So going to talk about that. Smart metering systems as well, which is the stock that keeps on giving. We've talked about that several times over the past 6 to 8 months. And also Cash Shell URA Holdings, URA. So okay. Cadence Minerals, first of all. Quick overview. Cadence Minerals is KDNC. It's a company that invests into rare earth and lithium projects, both at early stage and late stage feasibility, at the point where takeoff agreements are being put into place and so on. I'll go through each of the projects that Cadence is involved in briefly. Firstly, probably the best known one is Sonora project in Mexico, the Sonora Lithium project, which of course is run by Bacanora Minerals. Now, Cadence realized a profit on its initial investment last year, but still owns a 9.5% stake in Bacanora and thereby the Sonora project. The project itself has a net present value of $1.25 billion in lithium carbonate, which is pretty impressive by any standards. There's a takeoff agreement with Hanwha, the Japanese battery company, and also a Chinese investor, NextView, has recently acquired 20% of Bacanora Minerals. So that's a very exciting ongoing project. Cadence has already taken some profits out of that, but as I said, it owns 9.5% of Bacanora Minerals, and with that sort of net present value, you can get some idea of the sort of valuation that we can apply to Cadence. Mm-hmm. The Sinovet project, which is operated by European Metals Holdings, EMH, Cadence has a 20% stake in the Sinovet lithium project. That's got a net present value somewhere in the region of $120 to $150 million. And that's potentially going to be the hub for European electric vehicle manufacturing going forward. It has a stake in MacArthur Minerals, which has operations in Australia and Nevada. That's the Stonewall Lithium Project in Nevada and the Pilbara tenements in Australia. 15% interest there. It has an interest, 7% interest in the Carabib, which has a operations in Namibia. That's again lithium and copper, and Yangibana, which is a rare earth project in Australia, where it has a 30% stake across all of the tenements. Late last year, the company announced that it had newly acquired a stake in the San Luis lithium bearing region in Argentina, up to six permits, and it's taken an initial 4% with rights to take up to 100%, so complete ownership of the project going forward to provide funding and so on. So you add up the net value of those projects, and you've got some pretty chunky operations in there. But rather than just invest into a particular project from an investor standpoint, what I like about Cadence is that it offers that spread of risk. So you've got early stage all the way through to late stage, and we've seen with Sonora how the later stage projects yield a great return on investment, and of course Cadence has retained the stake there. The company is currently worth 29 million sterling. It's been as high as 0.58p, as low as 0.24p, but hot on the heels of the San Luis announcement last year, the board announced a massive director share buying program. Kieran Mazzari, the CEO, and Donald Strang, director. Kieran bought 3.5 million shares at 0.29p. Donald Strang bought 3.2 million shares at 0.27p, and they've both entered into a defined director purchase program for the next 12 months, where they will each buy £1,000 worth of shares each month for the next 12 months. And that really, I think, puts a massive floor under the whole project and gives great value, because that's a serious commitment by both directors late last year. There's been a lot of analyst interest in the stock. Hannam & Partners have written a detailed note on the company, which is published on the Cadence Minerals website. It can also be found on the brand UK Cadence Minerals feed. Hannam & Partners have a 0.79p target based on the net present value established from cash flow and implied valuations of all of the projects we've discussed. Not incidentally, the San Luis project. It was published before the San Luis project, so that would obviously add some additional value there. But anyone looking for exposure into lithium and rare earths, the empowerment of the electric vehicle industry going forward, this company probably offers the best option, because it has the best and the most attractive spread of risk.
Absolutely. And just looking at the chart there, it's down low there, isn't it?
Well, it has, yeah. You'll see the charts really the stock has really bounced back since Christmas, traded all the way down to 0.24p, and it's bounced back to 0.37p now. And obviously, I fully expect now that we'll see a retracement in that downwards spiral in the stock from last year, simply because the directors are buying every month, and also there are Cadence regularly updates the market on developments, and it's taken some big steps forward. If you just look at the news flow from the company for the last 6 months, there's a tremendous amount of news and development that's come out of each of its projects.
Yeah, so how much they're saying, the director share pages, how much they are committing to this, you said?
Well, last December, the 12th of December, Kieran Mazzari bought 3.5 million shares at 0.29p, which is a chunky buy by any standards, yeah?
Yeah.
Donald Strang bought 3.2 million shares at 0.27p. So, I mean, you know, if you're talking commitment, you know, that's a ballsy commitment in my book. You know, it puts and there's the additional commitment, which is okay, a small amount of money, but they're putting £1,000 each in buying further shares for the next 12 months. But that really, to me, signals the confidence that the board have in the project going forward. And obviously, I know for a fact, seeing Kieran talk about it, they're very excited about the latest development with the San Luis project in Argentina. And of course, if you look at the lithium, where the lithium exploration is taking place in all South America, in particular, Chile, Argentina, those are two of the main lithium carbonate bearing regions. So very exciting going forward. And I think Cadence is set for a great 2018.
Yeah. Well, I think it is. The chart looks good. Like I said, it's at a low here, but it's definitely having a bit of a bounce. And it'd be interesting to see if it gets over that 200-day moving average, which is just just below 0.4. Yep. And closed above that. That's probably a decent bullish sign. All right, and what's next, Al? What else?
Okay, we talked about this company twice over the past year, and again, every time we talked about it, we talked about it at 560p. We talked about it at 600p, and today the stock is trading at 835p. This is Smart Metering Systems, SMS. Smart metering systems, as the name implies, provide metering systems for gas, electric, energy management services, and they also operate a data collection service for major projects with their partners. The company announced interims last September. We're now in the run-up to the full-year results, so it's always a good time to buy because there's obviously some anticipation as to where the results will be this year. But last September, the interims showed a 23% hike in profit, 25% increase in revenue to 67 million, and the company raised the dividend by 24% as well. The dividend yield is currently 0.5%, but that's on the back of a share price that seems to be racing higher. And the growth really is driven by the rollout of the new smart meters that are appearing in our houses all up and down the country. And last year, the company raised 150 million to fund the rollout of the smart metering systems throughout the UK. Some 4 million systems are being installed as we speak. The shares currently are trading 835p. They've been as high as 900p on the year and low as 456p. So market cap of 937 million. But the brokers are very bullish about the stock. Broker Macquarie has a buy rating for the stock. Previously 1068p, now it's 1125p, and I just this company, had you gone into it a year ago, you'd have doubled your money and you'd be collecting a dividend along the way. And there's every prospect of this going higher, simply because the smart metering systems are the way forward, and they have so many applications both in the domestic sector and in the commercial sector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, marvel stuff, and definitely. And there's a lot of that going on. Self metering. We need to get one of those in our house. We have a problem recently. We just doubled our unit usage over the last month, and we weren't here in December. I thought, what's going on there? So we need one of those smart metering things, definitely. Then where it's coming from? The missus had me sit in my office with no heaters on for one day, and it was freezing. I had six layers of clothes on, and she said, "Yeah, no, it's not your office." Thanks for that. I caught a cold and everything. But anyway, I know.
No, actually, as an aside, I changed suppliers just short before Christmas, and we signed up with this People's Energy supplier, and People's Energy are a lot cheaper than most of the other suppliers, but they also pay a percentage of profits back to their customers too, which I quite like. So anyway, that's an aside.
Marvellous. What's next, Al?
Okay, now this is a company that piqued my interest last week. Literally, it's sort of, well, hot off the press, so to speak. But the former uranium resources became a cash shell late last year. URA Holdings, the epic code is URA. Now, what piqued my interest was that the company raised £900,000 late last year, and obviously that's gone into a cash shell to be invested into a project, and this was on December the 19th. But the two directors involved in it are Melissa Sturgis. She was responsible for recapitalizing Sigma Rock, which was Messaging International PLC a year or so ago, and Peter Redman from Kennedy Ventures and Three Legs Resources, which now trades as Salva RX. So those two are well respected directors. They both put their own money in, so they participated in that raising. But what really caught my eye, and this was, I was speaking to a broking colleague of mine up in London last week about this, a chap called David Steinpress, who is a veteran resources investor and board director. He's been on the board of Norseman Gold, Ascent Capital Holdings, formerly of Monto Minerals, Excelsior Gold, North River Resources, Davos Resources, etc., etc. David Steinpress has built a 3.7% stake in URA Holdings in the open market. Now, to the best of my knowledge, he didn't participate in the placing, so he's been picking up shares in the open market since the placing. As a cash shell, the rules of the exchange, or the AIM rules, say it has until June the 20th to make an investment. But my guess is that that investment's already been identified and the due deal's been done. So I would expect in the next few weeks we'll hear something about this. Currently worth about 1.2, 1.3 million. So it is what it is. Clearly, it's a punt. We don't know what the project is yet, but the sequence of events caught my eye, and I will declare an interest too. I have sort of taken a punt on the back of that.
I see. Yeah, a bit of a punt, you, Al. Do you know what? I've got to say, I'm drawn into punts now and again, but I'm trying to stay away from them, you know? Because the problem is with me, it's not that they don't work out. It's when I take a punt, to me, it's a binary bet. And when I invest, I think I have more than a 50% chance of doing well on stocks. I've researched it. I like the price entry normally if I'm being carried away. And so I feel the odds are in my favour. With a punt, it's 50-50 pretty much. And I don't have... I just feel I'm not committed enough to it. So I end up either selling too early or too late, or because I'm so unsure of it, I end up not doing very well, I think. That's the thing, you know?
Yeah, I agree, and I mean I'm sort of fairly cautious in what I do in this regard. I mean, I say I've taken a punt, but in my book, the two board directors participating and what they've done previously, coupled with David Steinpress buying in the open market, building up a 3.7% stake, you know, that says to me that there's something fairly attractive on the way, whether it's rare earths, whether it's more uranium, or whether it's something in blockchain, which is what everyone seems to be doing. I think the project quality should be pretty good. So to my mind, you're backing the people and you're backing the structure to go out and do something amazing.
Okay.
So we shall see. We shall see. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. You know, clearly, when you're looking at this, you've got to go in with both eyes open, and it is a punt. But it's the sequence of events and the people involved, to my mind, make it more than just a punt.
Yeah. No, I know that. And exactly. And sometimes those punts pay off. Sometimes, you know, you can wait later and get an entry around about the same level or less. So it's up to you. Sometimes you can get in early and enjoy the rise. And sometimes it doesn't pay off. Sometimes news takes longer to land than you think, doesn't it? Which is annoying.
It does.
I've done that.
It does.
And you think, oh, come on. And I've done that with a couple of stocks. And they weren't punts so much. I mean, that's one of the things for 2018 I'm going to do. I'm not going to jump in early. I'm happy to get more news to let the story unfold a little bit. Yeah, there'll be a price rise, but it always comes back a little bit. And then after that news, I'll get in where I'm happy with the story a bit more, when the story's unfolded a bit more. You know, that's it's just two particular stocks I've sat in for like a year and nothing's happened, and that's money tied up, and they've basically gone lower and lower. Liquidity is such that you can't really get out of them. So, which is annoying. Anyway. Lovely stuff, Al. Thanks for that, and we'll speak next week.
Thanks, Josh. Speak next week. Cheers.
All right, time for lessons learned from investors and traders. This one's from Angurichi. I can't pronounce that. I think it's a Twitter name. But thanks for your submission. Much appreciated. And the quote is, take profits, top slice, especially in AIM. Protect your capital. Wise words there. All right. Top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours are... At 5, Mayen Energy, MYN. At 4, Ascent Resources, AST. At 3, Greatland Gold, GGP. At 2, Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas, that's ECO ticker. And number 1 most followed company on the podcast yesterday was, I was going to say Neil. It was Neil. Neil's not a company. Neil's the CEO. Vasarion, VRS. All right, top 5 most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Frontera Resources, FRR. Well, T3 drilling permit received. At 4, new oil and gas, MF Devco agreement with Aker and on 11.1 update. Also at 3, Mayen Energy, that's an operations update. At 2, John was on the podcast earlier, that's Q4 Cobre sales, sets a new record. And at 1, the most liked RNS was from SDX Energy, update on drilling operations in Morocco. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.